It's time for Cofield & Company, live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas.
They are the Cleveland Browns of the NBA.
Hey, it's going to be special. We're going to talk about this forever, baby.
Sitting behind a chicken keyboard.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Friday, road show, our home, Golden Nugget, right across from the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen. Should be a wild one today. Good crowd building around the Golden Nugget set. Happy hour at Cadillac starts at 4 o'clock. The Grotto! Grotto has changed locations. If you've been here to the Golden Nugget down on Fremont, you know the Grotto was in the middle of the property, a gigantic space it was in, and it's now towards the back of the property. It's open. The brick oven is all flaming up. Bar's open. Right across from the Chick-fil-A, and eventually in the middle of the property is going to be a salt grass. So cool things going on down here at the Golden Nugget. Adam Candy's along in just a little bit. Lots of NBA. We'll get into the Gail King versus the world. I actually have her back. Well, that's a mixed bag, but we'll get to that in about 15 minutes. Let's do it.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
So Lakers lose last night to the team that's trying to bust up basketball tradition, the Houston Rockets. Rockets come in and win the game 121-111. We'll get into the Rockets style in just a couple of minutes. But let's concentrate on the Lakers. First of all, not a great loss, right? Came in laying 6.5. This is supposed to be the dominant team in the West. We did get an all-time photo. That LeBron cradle and rock reverse dunk was freaking awesome, and it looked even more awesome with the photo from underneath the basket where it looked like the 36, 37-year-old was flying, just incredible. Still amazing athletically, and I swear he's pushing like 280. That dunk was nuts, but they didn't win the game. And I've been saying all along this year, I still believe the Clippers are the favorite to win the title. I think it's a better constructed team. I don't love the addition from a character standpoint of Marcus Morris to the Clippers, but I understand why they did it. Another guy who can help defend LeBron from time to time, as if Paul George and Kawhi can't do it, but that gives him another weapon. But I think the Clippers are the better team. They're the better defensive team. They're the deeper team. I mean, the guys coming off the bench are just ridiculous. Imagine having great players like Kawhi and PG-13 and then going, oh, wait, if they have an off night, then Montrezl Harrell comes off the bench or Lou Williams comes off the bench, and either one of them can go for 30 points. That's a great team, and don't be fooled by the record just a couple of games behind the Lakers. Obviously, they're treating the regular season the way the Raptors treated the regular season with Kawhi. It's all about making sure you're healthy for the playoffs. Lakers are really good, but I still think they need another primary ball handler aside from LeBron, and they didn't get help at the trade deadline, and now they're banking on buyout season, as they're calling it. And while Darren Collison is a nice option, I guess, for 15 minutes a game, if that's the one prize you add to the team, not that stoked about that. Yesterday, Matt Barnes, one of his buddies, was talking about it on The Jump and said Collison, who, remember, walked away from about $30 million over the next 2 years, might come back. Collison told him 50-50 that he might come back, and then Collison showed up at Staples last night and was sitting next to Jeannie Buss. So if it hasn't been done, maybe I missed it in the last couple minutes, but Collison's probably going to be the guy that they add to the mix. Don't love it. Don't love it. And if buyout season means getting guys like J.R. Smith, who's not a buyout, but there's actually rumors that J.R. Smith could be added to the roster, and we laughed at that before the season when those rumors were out there. I hope they're just unfounded rumors again. I don't know why LeBron would ever want J.R. Smith on the team anywhere near him after what he did with his finals gaffe, costing any chance of LeBron winning a title in that Cavs Golden State series. So hard pass on Mr. Smith. Around the NBA, we just talked about the Rockets going to small ball. So I want to build on that in just a little bit. But the other team that the locals are freaking out about, and I mean locals in Philly, Sixers, yikes. Last night, again, poor showing. That's going to be the primary competition along with the Heat. I think outside shot. Pacers, Celtics. I like the Celtics a lot, but I don't love the Sixers. I didn't like the Sixers coming into the season. I don't understand why the Sixers keep going big, 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 while the rest of the league is going smaller and smaller, even to the crazy levels of the Rockets playing 6'7", 6'8", dudes at center. There are more ways to beat Greek Freak than just trying to go big against him. The rest of hoops is going small. Sixers need to go small. They're not going to do it during the season, but they need to make some big decisions in the offseason. If that means Embiid is gone, then he's gone. But last night they got smoked. 112-101. Giannis destroyed them. 36 points and 20 rebounds. All right, on the way back, we'll get into that Gail King controversy as she did an interview with Lisa Leslie. She's getting a bunch of bunk over it. I actually think Lisa Leslie was the one who embarrassed herself.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas for Football Friday. On Cofield and Company.
All right, 5 minutes away from getting into what has exploded on many fronts. That is the Gail King deal with Lisa Leslie. As the gentleman's asking you a question, Adam Candy, even with your headsets on. Rocking and rolling here at the Golden Nugget.
100% accurate, yes.
He was like, where's the Cadillac Mexican Kitchen? Actually, I think it was a bathroom request. So he found it. Angel, nice job. But 5 minutes away, getting into Gail King, the interview with Lisa Leslie, asking about Kobe. There's issues on that front. There's also discussions now about black-on-black attacks and men versus women. Women versus women. So it's a pretty rich topic that's coming up. Lakers lose last night. I don't think the Lakers did themselves any favors by adding nothing at the trade deadline. I still don't believe they're the team to beat in the West. I believe that's the Clippers. I've said that before the season. I stick with it. And I'm not going to overreact to last night's loss, but that's a Rockets team that you need to beat, especially as the Rockets, Candy, are developing this new small ball thing. Westbrook was awesome. Harden was not. And they still won the game.
James Harden hasn't been great for about a month now. Mm-hmm. And James Harden has taken a bit of a backseat. And I wonder if this is a long-term play in some ways by the Rockets here to maybe go back and forth with letting Westbrook and Harden at different times step forward in different ways. Now, Westbrook, of course, didn't play in the middle of the week and came back and drops 40-plus on the Lakers. But for Harden, he's just not putting up the same amount of shots. And for all of the Harden haters out there, I don't know how you're going to swallow this one, but he's not out there taking control of the offense, and the Rockets blasted the Lakers in the last few minutes last night, and you know how they did it? P.J. Tucker and Robert Covington hitting three-pointers. They had their small ball lineup out there with their 4 and 5 knocking down threes because the spacing is just so beautiful right now for the Rockets. On the Lakers' side, now you have a very specific matchup problem. And now you have to figure out what kind of lineup you want to use to defend that, because you have 6'9 LeBron, 7 foot Anthony Davis, and 7 foot JaVale McGee on the floor. And you have a defensive challenge the likes they have not seen. I think it was a mistake not to add at the deadline. I think the Clippers made a good addition with Marcus Morris. They get more scoring. They get more depth, as though they actually needed more depth.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by the Rockets' attempt here. I am. But we know that's where college basketball is going, you know, with one in and four out. And it basically, within a game, when it's a big team against a small team, it's a test to see who's going to acquiesce and adjust first to the other team's style. Like, could the Lakers force, here's the thing, now you can't force the Rockets to go big. Most times you have that option. It's like, hey, we're going to force you to go small. No, we're going to force you to go big. Rockets are like, you're not going to force us to do anything. We're going small, so you adjust, and maybe you're going to score 80 points inside, but I doubt it. And I'll give you one of the other. I still think it's a Lakers problem. I don't think the two-man game down the stretch where LeBron's playing the point and they're clearing out a side for LeBron and Davis works all the time efficiently enough, especially since it's going to be most effective getting twos, not threes.
There are multiple issues that brings up, right? Because LeBron had 15 assists last night, and what did the last three key possessions look like? LeBron hucks up a contested three twice that goes in and out. I get it. LeBron wants to take over down the stretch, but what had worked for the Lakers thus far? LeBron passing the ball, and as you said, that's twos. And against the Rockets, twos versus threes, if you think the Rockets are going to hit those threes, is a problem. The Rockets already were shooting 44% of their shots from three-point range. The small ball lineup they use with P.J. Tucker before the Covington trade was shooting 50% of its shots from three-point range. Mike D'Antoni said post 7 seconds or less era from the Phoenix Suns. He said his one regret is that they didn't commit all the way to always shooting, always small, always running, all offense. And you know what? He found a GM in Daryl Morey who's willing to do it.
So the sports world is still, a lot of it, very raw following the passing of Kobe Bryant. It's been about 2 weeks now. And we talked about it at the beginning of last week. There's a full story to Kobe's life and existence, right? And I think that Monday we brought up in the middle of the show, we did about a half an hour in the first hour, about 20 minutes in the middle hour, another half an hour, 45 minutes in the final hour. In the middle hour, we talked about his full legacy, and that included his troubles in 2003 and 2004 in Colorado. Some people got mad. And our whole point was, what is too soon? You either tell a person's story or you don't. Well, for a lot of people, it's still too soon. So Gail King of CBS on the morning show had a sit down with Lisa Leslie. I watched her entire interview with Lisa Leslie. I thought she did an awesome job. I actually thought Lisa Leslie, she can have her opinion, but I thought she came off really poorly. And then after watching it, I see all the reaction. I'm like, wait, Gail King was the bad person in this whole thing? Listen to a part of the conversation with Gail King as she broaches the topic of Kobe and his troubles early on in his career in Colorado.
It's been said that his legacy is complicated because of a sexual assault charge, which was dismissed in 2003, 2004. Is it complicated for you as a woman, as a WNBA player?
It's not complicated for me at all. Even if there's a few times that we've been at a club at the same time, Kobe's not the kind of guy, never been like, please go get that girl or tell her or send her this. Mm-hmm. I have other NBA friends that are like that. Mm-hmm. Kobe's, he was never like that. I just have ever seen him being the kind of person that would be do something to violate a woman or be aggressive in that way. That's just not the person that I know.
I thought that was terrible. Right? You're shaking your head. I thought it was terrible, that answer.
I think there are a lot of ways that you can talk about this situation that don't involve something that has the dismissiveness and the bias of, oh, he's not that kind of guy. I never saw him do it. What do we always joke about when it comes to people who are murderers or other serial criminals, and they interview the neighbor next door on the local news and they say, I don't know, he seemed like a good guy to me, he was always nice. So that, to me, if you want to defend Kobe as your friend, defend Kobe as your friend, but to go with a character argument like that, that demands to me that you go back and read some of the transcripts from the police of when Kobe was actually detained and was talking to them about this situation.
When you speak about this, you really need to go back and examine facts. People forget. You know, it's 17 years ago. People forget. We'll hear more of Lisa Leslie or from Lisa Leslie in the 5 o'clock hour. To your point, I don't think she was real familiar with the original story. And on the, hey, this is the person I knew, I don't believe that they did that. You got to be really careful. Really careful. I know at least two dudes who have been involved in domestic violence incidents. And, like, at the time, I was like, boy, I didn't see that coming. But you know what? Since then, I haven't ever stepped up and said, they didn't do it. Just because I never saw them do something like that doesn't mean they didn't do it. You got to be really careful. You don't know what a person's capable of. You just don't. You just don't. So that clip was sent out, and it was about 4 minutes, and people just exploded, and I understand it. People are still raw, right? Hell, you can go to extremes like Michael Jackson, and people get mad when that documentary came out, and there's bad words said about Michael Jackson, right? I get it. People have their biases. They don't want you hammering someone that they loved or were friends with. It doesn't jive with them. But it doesn't mean the facts weren't the facts. So I get it. I get it. And I still prescribe to the notion that I don't know what too soon is. Because if you listen to that interview with Gayle King, it's like, hey, is it too soon? So 2 weeks later, it's still too soon to talk about it. Can we never talk about it again? This is the part that drives me nuts. Gayle King did a really good job. She went on and did her own video because she got flame-thrown by some people on social media, which, by the way, social media doesn't represent everyone. It's a very small portion of the people out there viewing and consuming news and stories, but she turns on the camera, and I just thought this is where she just loses her journalist card because she starts to backpedal, and frankly, she also sounds super insubordinate here. Like, I think her job's in trouble.
I've been up reading the comments about the interview I did with Lisa Leslie about Kobe Bryant. I know that if I had only seen the clip that you saw, I'd be extremely angry with me too. I am mortified, I'm embarrassed, and I am very angry. Unbeknownst to me, my network put up a clip from a very wide-ranging interview, totally taken out of context, and when you see it that way, it's very jarring. It's jarring to me. I didn't even know anything about it. I started getting calls. What the hell are you doing? Why did you say this? What is happening? I did not know what people are talking about.
You did the interview. You thought the questions were pertinent. You got interesting answers back. You did your job. That's embarrassing. She's starting to backpedal. Oh, the network did it. At that point, now you're being insubordinate. Now you're questioning your news side people, editors, and their judgment. Really bad. Really bad. And this is turning into a bigger thing now because folks are going after her and Oprah. I think she needs to speak to Oprah about what a journalist is and also get a little... Someone needs to talk to her and instill a little confidence back in what she did from a journalistic standpoint. Because she's cracking under social media pressure and you shouldn't do that. Easier said than done, but you shouldn't do it. Did you like what you just heard?
I can't say I liked it. I can't say I think that it was necessary. I can understand the instinct. I can understand why she feels that way. Because let's be honest, as a journalist, when you go into that kind of interview, you're thinking to yourself, I need to set up that question. You're not thinking that's the first thing. I'm going to walk in, sit down. Hi, Lisa, I'm Gayle. What do you think about Kobe's rape allegations? What do you think it does for his legacy? Right. No, you feel like right that you're going to work your way into that question in the interview. Yeah. But once it's out there, you no longer have control of that, and that's that. And whatever comes from how the interview is clipped up or promoted or anything, you have to have considered that long before ask the question.
Yeah, you're a moron if you think you're going to broach the subject and you're not going to get anything negative back. You need to be prepped for negativity back. Is she that guarded or protected when she's on that show? Which, by the way, there's so many issues here. And like I said, we have a lot more of the interviews and comments in the 5 o'clock hour. But, you know, that morning show also dealt with a male versus female issue of its own with Charlie Rose. So I don't know what she's doing backpedaling. Like, you thought it was an issue. You thought it was important to rep an alleged victim, a female. Why are you backpedaling?
I'm not going to claim to know the pressures that she feels and the things that you reference, right? The gender situation, the racial situation.
I think the racial stuff is, it's getting real heated. Snoop put some stuff out, so we'll get into all that in the 5 o'clock hour. We got Larry Brown from one of our favorite blogs, Larry Brown Sports, on this topic because he did a really good job of collecting all the audio and some of the Twitter action, so that's coming up. And then later in the hour, we've got Curtis Terry on UNLV's game tomorrow against Fresno.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
So for the network to take the most salacious part when taken out of context and put it up online for people who didn't see the whole interview is very upsetting to me, and that's something I'm going to have to deal with them.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas. It's Cofield and Company.
That was the voice of Gail King from CBS. We'll explain that further in just a couple seconds. At the end of this hour, right around 3:58, another one of the Vegas Golden Knights ticket giveaway as Sky Diamonds is giving out a $1,000 gift card. That's the culmination of our Big Sky Diamonds giveaway contest. At 3:58, you're going to hear the Sky Diamond sounder. Caller 14 at 3:58 will win a pair of Vegas Golden Knights tickets, and you're qualified to win that Sky Diamonds gift card. Sky Diamonds, located in Town Square, where Las Vegas gets engaged. That comment by Gail King on an unplugged video, I guess, at home, I think has her suspended right now. She wasn't on this morning on the morning show on CBS. She had a tone like, hey, I've got some talking to, a little tongue-lashing I'm going to give the people at CBS. I think it's going to be the other way around. Larry Brown from Larry Brown Sports is covering this story. He did a great blog piece on it today, kind of wrapping up what's happened to this point. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
First, what do you think of my comments that she may be suspended right now and they just haven't announced it? I saw on Twitter they said, hey, she had a previous engagement, but I don't know that I'm buying it after hearing those comments.
Well, I think it. I'm not confident in which way it's going between whether the network asked her not to, whether she decided not to, or whether it was mutual. Because you know she was very upset with them, and of course management isn't ever going to like it being called out by someone for wrongdoing. And she also went against their wishes, according to her video, which was. They had asked her to keep quiet and let it pass, and she said she was not going to do that. She refused to and went against their direction, it seemed like. So, I think mutual or whether it was one-sided or not, I think she seemed upset enough where I could totally buy that she wasn't ready to go back on air, and maybe it could have been the other way around as well.
Give me your take on what you saw on the initial video, and that was the interview clip that they pulled of Gail King talking to Lisa Leslie about Kobe Bryant's legacy going back to the 2003 allegations.
I think if you just evaluate that clip on its own and that's all you saw, you didn't see the rest of the interview, you don't know the rest of the questions that were asked, I think you could reasonably watch that video and feel like, wow, this woman is out to get Kobe. She's not allowing Lisa a chance to defend Kobe and believes that that it should hinder his legacy. And I think when people bring it up to discuss Kobe and his legacy, I think what's important is to determine, what part of his legacy it is. And you know, is it a large part? Is it a small part? Is it a footnote? Is it, something that should be talked about? Is it the only thing you're bringing up? And if you're only bringing that up, it seems like you're trying to prove a point and you're missing everything else that was great about him. And just looking at that one clip alone, I think someone would conclude, wow, this woman is out to make a point. But in the totality of the interview, I think that's why that clip misrepresented it, and that was my takeaway just watching only that.
What do you think of Lisa Leslie, sort of a media member, saying that the media should not bring it up?
I don't think that's right, and I don't look at her as a media member. And I think that's a big problem that's gotten blurred these days, which is there are so many ex-athletes who are part of the media, but they're not really journalists. They're not even close to journalists. They don't do journalism, and it's two completely different things. And maybe they're analysts, maybe they're friends, but they don't know the difference, and they want to treat people like friends, and it's two separate things. So I don't view her, while she may work in analyst roles and while she may work on TV, I don't view her as a journalist, and I think it's two separate things. Now, that doesn't mean that her opinion doesn't matter. It doesn't mean that her opinion doesn't count. But in this context, she's not speaking, in my opinion, she's not speaking as a journalist or media member. She's speaking as a friend giving insight about Kobe from her perspective, and that's why she was being interviewed, because, hey, she knows some stuff about him on a personal level that others might not, and the more you hear those stories, the more it helps people evaluate what kind of person he was and sways their opinion of whether or not he may or may not have done it.
Larry, I feel like it's fair when you are going to talk about the legacy of someone who has the profile of Kobe Bryant to bring up everything. And if that's part of everything, then of course you have, I would say, not just the opportunity, but an obligation. I mean, one out of every six women in the United States has been either the victim of an attempted or a completed rape. They're representing a huge segment of population by bringing up that piece. So I guess I put it to you to say, do you think it's fair in the bigger context of Kobe's legacy to have that discussion?
Of course. I think it's necessary, but I think what's important to do is place it into context and determine what part of his legacy it is. And for me, I look at everything that he did, all the good that he contributed to the world, all the ways that he connected with fans, the way he entertained fans, the way he mentored people, the way he seemingly was a great role model as a father. He was a great family man, it seems. Showed people what it's like to be a great parent. He passed down all his basketball knowledge. He inspired millions of people. He did so much good throughout his life that is a huge part of his legacy. And if you're only focusing on that one case, to me, it overlooks so much of what else he did that was good. It doesn't mean that you can't bring up the other part. You can bring both up, but it needs to be placed into context. And to me, that is a serious matter. It was an allegation. It went to court. And it's a serious thing. And yes, it's part of his story. But the more good he started to do, and the more he was doing in retirement, the more he was passing down, the more positive he was adding to the world, in my opinion, the more that started to build up and make the other part less of the standout part of his legacy, in my opinion. You know, the other people can go the opposite direction. They can have more charges, more offenses, and that becomes more of their story. For Kobe, it became less and less and less part of the story, in my opinion. And that does not diminish what may or may not have happened, and that does not diminish what the woman went through. But to me, being fair about this, a fair way to look at it is, hey, how much of his story is this? And he did so much more in his career, it became less of his story, in my opinion.
Larry Brown with us from LarryBrownSports.com. We'll close on this because this is developing. What have you seen, well, yesterday and then today with the Snoop Dogg versus Gayle King and Oprah story that's developing?
Yeah, you know, I think Snoop is totally different. I think he's playing to the people, playing to the fans, and he knows how to appeal to them. And, you know, when you use raw language and when you connect on a basic level to with people and with fans, and, you know, you drop whatever cuss words and go right after someone because you object to it, you know, and you come at it from a fan perspective, I think you're going to get a lot of love for doing it that way. A lot of people are going to enjoy it. And, you know, and I understand, you know, where that's coming from and why a lot of people have brought more attention to it and have jumped on that side of it.
I wonder if it appeals to all of his female fans.
I
don't know the answer, but I just wonder.
Yeah, I don't even know that I want to go in that direction there and make assumptions about how the demographics of his fan base. You know, there are a lot of people who may just overlook and may not care as much about it.
The site is LarryBrownSports.com. We're going to get into a story that you guys just posted, the Astros and their code breaking. We have more information on their cheating, other stories about Mookie Betts and the issues with that trade, Masai Ujiri. I mean, there's stuff out basically like every half hour on Larry's blog. It's great. LarryBrownSports.com. Just go to the blog view. Larry, we appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
You got it. On the Snoop topic, and again, we'll expound on this a little more in the 5 o'clock hour. This is what he posted on Instagram. He had an old photo of Oprah and El Creepo, the worst Creepo, right? Big Harv, Harvey Weinstein. He started going after Oprah, said, did that fake-ass Michael Jackson S to tarnish his name with them lion-ass kids, and here she is with a known rapist smiling and laughing. F you, Oprah and Gail. Free Bill Cosby. Okay. We'll come back. We'll address more of that a little later on. That's strong. That's strong. UNLV basketball talk as we get you ready for the Rebels game tomorrow in town against Fresno with Curtis Terry.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
They're playing some different guys. They've had transfer become eligible at semester. New Williams, their guard, is shooting it at a higher level. The bigs are playing with more confidence. They're just playing as a better team right now. We were able to go in there and maybe catch them a little bit off guard when we're at their place and kind of stay in the game long enough and find a way to win at the end. Now we know we're going to get their best effort, especially with local kids coming home.
Now, back to the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas. It's Cofield & Company.
Turning point in the season for the Rebels? Maybe, maybe not. Candy, you think these are pivotal contests. The Rebels right now are in the midst of a four-game losing streak. You knew it was going to be tough going 3-4 on the road. The home game is top five San Diego State. Well, they lost all four, and they were competitive in all of them, even the blowout against Colorado State. That one kind of ended early in the second half with an explosion by CSU, but they've had – at least a couple of games like Utah State and also San Diego State where they just get stuck. 11 minutes left in San Diego State game. The game's at 45 apiece. They can't score for like 4 minutes. Run, San Diego State gets out to a safe lead. They can't come back. Utah State, 48s, 7.5 minutes left. That portion of the game turns into, in and around the 48s, 16-1 run. Utah State closes out the game 21-6. They're close, but they're not finishing. And that was T.J. Altzberger talking about Fresno State. They did finish against Fresno State, but it is a different Fresno State team in terms of the rotation. We'll get into all that. But Curtis Terry calls the games for Learfield. He's the analyst on radio, former Rebel. Curtis, what's up, buddy?
Oh, man, I'm just out here working. I'm actually at the Westgate working a football coaches clinic.
Okay, very cool. What kind of coaching clinic?
It's high school football coaches, college football coaches come down for professional development. So just out here trying to see if I can help some more people raise some more money for their programs. So all our local high school football coaches, come on down and stop by so I can help you guys out.
There you go. Curtis, so where are you right now? Plug. Where are you right now with UNLV and its inability to close out games that they're very competitive in, and especially the defense that is sagging at the worst moments?
Man, just running out of gas. I mean, obviously we kind of noticed that with Mbaka the other night early on, just was gassed, just didn't have anything left in the tank. And guys have been busting their butts, playing extended minutes, and giving everything they got. And they're competitive, like the other night, for 32, 33 minutes, and then just hit that wall, and you just can't get any further, can't bust through it. That's one thing I see. And that's bound to happen, especially with a shorter bench, with Jonah not getting any minutes the other night. But then also just learning how to finish games and how to continue to compete from start to finish. And I think that just comes, again, with confidence, reps, especially from the point guard position, specifically for Marvin Coleman. A lot of times I don't feel like he's been in that position before. We've got to clamp down and get every possession's got to be perfect from here on out. Trying a little bit too hard. So I think it's some growing pains. But for me, those things, they can work through, especially the night, great effort, as opposed to in Fort Collins against Colorado State, the effort just basically dropped off. Once the Rams put that 16-3 run on them, it seemed like lights out, game over, just kind of packed it in.
So how did they get it back?
Just sticking with it, just sticking to the game plan, and sticking together. I think it's easy for people in that situation and for teams to pack it in and to say, you know, the heck with it. It's too hard. We don't want any part of it. But I think that just comes from within, and I think this group has what it takes to finish this thing strong. And I said it last night on TJ's show, and I'll say it again. I don't think this game on Saturday against Fresno is do or die. Obviously, you want them to win, but you more importantly want them to play good and play together. Continue with the hard-nosed, tough defense. Because win or loss, that can be deceiving. I'd rather see them continue to grind, continue to grow and improve, and not peak out and get a win and kind of relax, take their foot off the gas. So, I mean, it's kind of a two-edged sword. But nonetheless, I think the guys got to defend and just got to believe in themselves, because we've seen what they can do when they do that. But when they kind of separate, man, and kind of wear thin, we've seen that can go the other way as well.
UNLV taking on Fresno State tomorrow, 5 o'clock start at the T&M. It's Kids Day. Kids 12 and under can pick up a free stuffed lion courtesy of Lions Burn Care Center at UMC. Family four-pack as low as $79. You get four hats, four meals, four tickets. You do have to get those tickets today, though, a day in advance at UNLVtickets.com. Last thing on Utah State, I think they laid out a really scary, and it's scary for UNLV, blueprint of how to defend the Rebels. They used a 1-3-1 zone and a 2-3 zone. The 1-3-1, man, they had the one up top hedging out so far, and basically the message was, you're not going left. They crowded the left side offensively, their right side defensively of the floor, just shutting it down. The Rebels had no balance going to the right. How do they make sure they don't get caught in that situation again, especially when their best scorers are lefty and Bryce Hamilton? And the other guy who wants to get downhill and is a good scorer is Amari Hardy. He's also lefty.
They got to go right. Got to go right. No, I think it's tough. I think they kind of caught them off guard a little bit. And credit to Utah State, what they did was they just sagged in. They sucked in. They didn't have to stretch or spread their defense because there was no shooters on the floor. And so that way they could shade heavily topside and force it one direction. And everybody else was compacted in. But then you got to give Kata credit in the back. He wasn't letting anything get over him or through him. So that way Bryce Hamilton couldn't get those finishes at the rim that we've come accustomed to seeing over the last couple of weeks. As well as offensive rebounding for the Rebels wasn't there because of that size and that presence from him inside. I mean, big guy to finish around and over changes the game. But what they've got to do is just continue to compete. I know when they did get the ball inside to Bryce, that one possession at the free throw line, he turned, made a play, and it ultimately was for himself to finish over Kata, but they've got to get the ball inside and get it swung. You can't always try to drive through a 1-3-1 zone. At times you may be able to, but with the way people are going to play them, knowing that they're heavy left-handed guys from those two in particular, they've got to mix it up. But I know it's not a situation of they don't know what to do and TJ wasn't prepared. I think it's one thing to have a game plan, but also it's different to how you practice against it versus how it actually is and how the team executes it on defense. In that case, Utah State, it wasn't like that in practice, I'm sure. You had those force space, guys weren't sucking in that much and over-exaggerating that force right. But I think they'll be prepared for that next time. But again, it's just a case of coming out and making it happen. Because 33 great minutes and then just a bad stretch right there for that 16-1 run by the Aggies is kind of what finished the guys off. But the game, obviously, like you said, Steve, that night, the game was much closer than that. The score doesn't tell the full story of that one.
Curtis Terry, running Rebel radio analyst, joining us here on Cofield and Company. You know, Curtis, when we talk about teams wearing down and not being able to finish that full 40 minutes, we know the Rebels are not playing a deep rotation right now, and they're working Elijah Mitri-Long back into the rhythm here. Starts to look more like himself, having those four steals, couple of assists against Utah State. How do you think when this team is finally constructed, when we get to the Mountain West tournament, what do you think his role is going to be? What do you think it can be?
I think he can be the X factor for this team. Now, I don't think he has to necessarily start. I think he can be that spark off the bench and from that six-man role like he was the other night and just bring energy to the team. Obviously, he's a different player, brings a different dynamic to the floor as opposed to Marvin Coleman at that point guard position. He can defend. He can pick up full court. He can push the ball in transition. Not hesitant to knock down the outside shot or take it to the basket. But most importantly, he's a leader. And I think just the fire and the swag that he played with, like those Canadian guys say, it's a Canada team. I think he brings something different to the team, and it's just attitude. It's just nasty, just going to get it done no matter what and not scared to mix it up. I think that is what is going to be the big thing to give this team something different, because I think they're in need of of spicing it up a bit or kind of changing it up, because you can't continue to ride the same wave throughout. People are going to figure it out. But I think for him, he can be the X factor for this team and really elevate them to the next level. And I think he's just starting to get back to his old self. I mean, because some of the pull-ups he was hitting the other night, Adam, I mean, those were tough shots. Even a three at the end of the shot clock, those things are what he can bring, like he was doing feeling comfortable against Cincinnati. I mean, in that game, he put up 29 and almost single-handedly won that. That's the Eli Long that this team needs, because that allows everybody else to do what they do naturally. And again, just change it up, because it can't always be Bryce, Amari, and Bryce. So the more guys that they have coming to the table, the better they're going to be.
I agree with you completely. I mean, he is the type of player that can't be matched anywhere else on this roster right now. And as he gets healthy, as he gets his rhythm back together, I think he's going to be huge for the Rebels. You know, you mentioned this game coming up against Fresno State not being necessarily do or die. We know the Rebels do have to take care of business against the teams below them in the standings. When you look at the games that they have on this homestand, though, and you see the rival coming in with the Wolfpack on the back end of this, I kind of feel like standings-wise, if they're going to get that bye, if they're going to be able to skip that first round in the tournament, they're really going to have that game against Nevada. What do you think in terms of how this whole homestand shapes up for the Rebels?
Same story as always. You got to win at home. You got to protect home court. You've got to win those games at home. That's where you get that advantage of, I mean, if it's 3 to 5 points just because you're the home team and having the crowd behind you. So they've got to do their best to get these games at home, because obviously they got to go on the road. The pit's never easy, regardless of who they've got on the roster, who's healthy or who's active. We know what it's like down at San Diego. That's not going to be an easy game by any means. In San Jose, the last game of the regular season, who knows how that could go for either team, depending on kind of where they stand and how they feel about themselves. So these guys definitely got to do everything they can to win the games at home, knock off the people below them in the standings. But you've got to get one or two, or as many as you can, against the guys above you, because those could be the ones that get you that bye or make you play that extra day early, which we know is just one more game you got to try to win through that week to get that automatic bid, which all it comes down to at the end of the day when you're in this situation. Like the Rebels currently are.
I'm not sure if people watching on TV could feel the energy and atmosphere at the Spectrum, but I can tell you, fans make a difference, and especially students make a difference. My God, that place was probably half full overall, but they had three full sections of students. And Curtis, you were across from me there. It was freaking, and you were closer to the students than I was. It got freaking deafening at different points when they caught fire.
Oh, man, it was ridiculous. So the guy sitting next to me at the scorer's table, he was responsible for, like, the in-house music, the DJ, or whatever you want to call it. And at one point, he pulled out his cell phone so he could record his Apple Watch, because it had the decibel reader, the noise. And it got to 102. And so in that place, not even completely full, and the energy they brought, it does throw you off a little bit. I mean, you may not be able to focus. It may rattle you. But if the Rebels can get that advantage like they had against San Diego State, it makes a difference. It's definitely worth a couple points, and it just gives those guys something extra because they feel people behind them, the energy, the adrenaline. It's huge. So we definitely want everybody to come out and keep supporting these guys because they're doing everything they can and they're doing it the right way, and they're going to get their breaks. It's been a tough stretch with obviously the last four games that they've had, but I still think they've got it in them to finish this thing strong and still to finish in the upper third of the standings. But they definitely, all hands on deck from staff, from players, from trainers, from fans especially, everybody's got to be behind these guys so that way they can get it done.
We got about a minute left. Got to say this. I know people are down in the dumps right now about the way the team is playing. One positive on the horizon, if the plan by T.J. Altzberger and his staff is put the fence around Las Vegas. Like, if that's the long-term plan, they've already got three commits who are local. This is the game you can look at tomorrow that's really going to frustrate the crap out of you and why they need to put the fence around Vegas. Nate Grimes is back here for one final time. We'll see what happens in the Mountain West Conference Tournament if they match up. He's a Vegas guy. The one that is infuriating is Orlando Robinson was not recruited to come to UNLV. That was before TJ staff was here. We talked to Joe Esposito about, you know, some the decision that was made to not recruit Orlando Robinson, a Las Vegan. His mom went to UNLV, Curtis. And right, he's come in the league, and he's averaging 12 points and 6 rebounds. And even DeMarlo Slocum was like, man, I wish we had him. Man, if he goes off tomorrow, because he had a really good game the first time around. Not defensively. He's got to get better that way. But right. Guys like Orlando Robinson cannot get out of Vegas. Now, you know, listen, if they go to Oklahoma, they go to Kentucky, all right, that's one thing. They can't freaking land in the Mountain West Conference.
Right, I agree. And I know how you feel about him specifically. You've told me a number of times. But you definitely want to keep the homegrown guys. You want to keep them here, especially the guys that can make an impact. And, I mean, with Orlando, with size, you can't teach that. And just skill set. He's going to be, I mean, who knows what type of player after he continues to fill out physically and skill set and just evolve as a player. But you want to keep as many local guys home as you can, but you want the right guys. Not everybody is going to be a good fit for UNLV. If they're hometown, homegrown guys, but you want the guys that actually want to be here or are committed to being here and the ones that can make a difference and make an impact on the court and off the court in the community. Because, again, these people have seen them coming up through the AAU ranks, through high school. It's a different feeling for those guys especially. So I think it's important. But we know the two big fellas for Fresno, they're going to come in here this weekend and they're going to have something to prove because homecoming game, essentially. They're going to have their folks in the stands, their people, yeah. And they want to make a statement. So we're going to get their best shot. But that's always going to happen for those guys who feel like maybe they got snubbed or they weren't respected or they weren't wanted.
Curtis, we appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yes, sir. You guys have a good one.
There you go, Curtis Terry, former Rebel on the broadcast team on radio. Tip is at 5 o'clock. Running Rebel warm-up goes down at 4:30. This hour is brought to you by the our good friends down here at the Golden Nugget. Remember, Gordy Brown in the showroom, February 11th. Lasting Impression Show. So that thing is starting up pretty soon. The shows are every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 7:30. You can grab your tickets at the Golden Nugget box office. Gordy Brown, Lasting Impressions, right around the corner.